This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. Kidney stones, they affect almost 4 million people in the United States each year, and the number of cases is on the rise both here and across the globe. But the causes for this rise remain unclear. Despite their cause, they can be a quite debilitating and very painful problem. We'll hear with more on this and what you can do to prevent their formation is Dr. Stephen Knoll. He's Associate Professor of Medicine and the Residency Program Director and Vice Chair for Education at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Knoll. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for the invitation.
So kidney stones are on the rise. Help us understand, though, what exactly are they?
Kidney stones are, best way to describe it is think of like table salt, okay? And you can have these salts, so it can be sodium chloride like table salt or other salts like calcium oxalate that literally become solid in the kidneys and form what are called kidney stones.
So they're like little balls or little calcifications or?
Well, I would say the best way to describe it is really that they are things that are in liquid that become then solid. They may look like a ball, but they can be of various shapes and sizes.
And different sizes, like from the like for a grain of sand to a golf ball.
Absolutely.
Right. So they form, repeat that again, remind me, they form in the kidney.
They form in the kidney, in the urine.
So why do they create so much pain?
Well, when you get a stone and the stone is then trying to pass, your pipe that connects the kidney to the bladder called the ureter, it moves the urine through what we call peristalsis. It's sort of a combination of the nerve cells and the muscle cells to help move that urine through. And when you have a blockage, for example, from a kidney stone, you're going to get more of this peristalsis, and that creates a tremendous amount of pain. So it's not really the stone itself that's causing the pain. It's the response to the stone that's causing the pain.
Little contractions.
Yeah.
Almost, I hate to draw this analogy, and maybe this is not the same, but like in childbirth, you're having those continuous contractions
maybe something similar.
The uterus. And so this is on the ureter
is
getting contracted, so it's a lot of pain.
That's right.
Do we have a clue as to why they're on the rise?
There are probably a number of factors. Certainly, if we look at the obesity epidemic, there's definitely been a rise in stones that seems to be very much related to the rise in weight. The increase in diabetes, which again may also be tied to the obesity epidemic, certainly there's a link between diabetes and stones. There's some discussion about whether or not temperature change across the globe may have some role. Certainly, if we're talking about things coming out to make stones, the best way to prevent is to keep them in the solution, and the best way is by more water. And if there's much higher temperatures, you may sweat more, which means less water to the kidneys.
So obesity and is diet, does diet play a role, for example, what you eat?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Whether or not that's directly tied to an increase is not entirely clear because our diet has not been a tremendously healthy diet for decades. Although with the use of high fructose corn syrup, which sort of began maybe in the late 80s, again, there seems to be an increase in stones, but is it the high fructose corn syrup or is it the obesity that's resulted from the high fructose corn syrup is not entirely clear.
So why should weight or obesity add to the stone formation? That's not, I don't get quite that association.
It's not entirely been elucidated, but there's certainly very good data that the heavier you are, for example, or if you have diabetes, it alters the chemistry of the kidney and the way it handles certain substances, and it predisposes to easier stone formation.
That's interesting. So what happens is somehow that there's this concentration of the stone, and it kind of gloms together and makes the salts become kind of hardened. And is it purely, you said if there's more water, then the likelihood is less that the stones will form. So it's just really almost it's a concentration or
it's
the concentration of salt within a liquid.
Yeah, take a beaker and put some salt, Morton salt, in there, and then how do you dissolve it? You dissolve it by putting in water. And if you have enough water in there, it's not going to come back out to the salt anymore. It just stays dissolved in the solution.
So you also alluded to the higher global temperatures, and that's certainly been talked about with global warming.
Sure.
So you think worldwide with higher temperatures, therefore, as you said, people will sweat more, have less water within their bodies, and then potentially that's a role, that's playing a role as well?
Well, that's certainly, it's certainly a possibility. There's no absolute proof of that happening, just like there's a lot of debate about global warming. But certainly we know in this country, for example, we have what we call the Stone Belt, which is in the southwest and southeastern United States. Their temperatures are higher than, for example, our climate here in Syracuse. And the prevalence is much higher in those areas.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah. That really would point to it. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Stephen Knoll, and we're talking about kidney stones, what causes them, and then how to avoid them. So who's most at risk for stones?
If you look at the data, it appears that the young Caucasian male, generally the ages would be somewhere between 30 and 60 years old. Next would be Latino, followed by African American. Men do seem to outnumber women, although that gap is closing. It's not entirely clear why that's the case, although it is believed that obesity is playing a role there as well.
So once you get a kidney stone, are you more at risk for it recurring?
Absolutely. You're talking about your lifetime risk of having a second stone. That's probably about the flip of a coin. So you're talking about 50%.
So there's something that happens within your body, or maybe whatever factors cause the first stone, unless you change them, will cause successive stones.
Most stones you can probably you could probably safely say are the result of some genetic predisposition that then with environmental changes is what leads to the stone, which means you're going to be at risk for future stones unless you modify the environment, since we really don't have the ability to modify the genetic predisposition.
Right. So does it tend to run in families?
Absolutely.
So yeah, you do see that strong genetic link there. Given the relationship to this higher temperatures outside that we were talking about and the fact that you might sweat more, is it more prevalent? Are they more prevalent in the summer months?
There seems to be a tick up in stones in the summer months. And in certain areas, there may be a tick up in the holiday season, not because of temperature, but because of dietary changes. So calcium oxalate stones are the most common stones in the world. You can oftentimes see a tick in the prevalence of that type of stone. For example, like maybe around Christmas in the Northeast, the use of strawberry rhubarb pie, Thanksgiving and Christmas time.
Really?
And strawberries and rhubarb are very, very high sources of oxalate. And so if you're not drinking as much, maybe because you're consuming a little more alcohol, you may be, predisposing yourself to stones.
That's very interesting. So diet really plays a huge role.
Yep.
I mean, what you put into your body, as well as perhaps your genetic predisposition, but what you put into your body is really crucial here.
Absolutely.
In terms of the predisposition to it and perhaps controlling it.
Yep.
So to help us understand then, with all this in mind, mm-hmm. how can you avoid getting them? And we'll talk about then how to cope with them. What do you recommend people do to avoid getting them?
I think the most important thing, and if the only thing they remember from our interview today is what I'm about to say, then we did a great job, is you've got to drink. And
water.
Water is ideal, but
but when you say you've got to drink, people might think of that as
alcohol. Yeah, so step back. not alcohol. So water, any non-alcoholic beverage outside of maybe dark colas and the high fructose containing juices like the Kool-Aids, anything else is probably fine. Water is ideal. Lemon, so squeezing lemon into the water because it contains a substance that can inhibit stones called citrate. Your goal is to be drinking essentially an 8-ounce cup every hour you're awake. That's the goal if you've had stones to prevent further stones. And that is really the most important thing you can do.
More important
than any medications or any other dietary changes.
When you say you were mentioning lemons, would other citrus fruit play a similar role?
Some
like
citrus
limes
fruits,
or oranges
lime
or grapes?
Lime doesn't seem to have as much of an effect, but oranges certainly yes, but they also have a higher content of oxalate, so you have to be somewhat mindful.
So lemon water basically is ideal,
Absolutely. Is
what you're saying. And how about diet? What should you be avoiding as far as food? In other words, is a diet higher in animal protein maybe more likely to cause stones?
Yep. So you'd want to, if you can, you'd at the very least, don't add salt to your foods. That's very important. If you can limit your salt intake, that will reduce your risk. Animal proteins are tied to calcium stones as well as uric acid stones. So if you can limit your intake of animal protein. And then if, depending on the type of stone you have, then it's important to, you know, see someone perhaps like myself who can then talk about what other measures are necessary.
And how about weight? Is that an important factor? You were mentioning obesity. Should you be looking to lose weight as a potential preventative measure?
Right, so weight is an important factor, but there haven't been any studies that have directly assessed weight loss and incidence of stone, so I can't answer that question.
How about calcium supplements?
So calcium, you should not restrict your calcium by any means. And however you need to get your calcium is probably fine, but you don't want to overdo it. So either through diet or through supplementation, it would be fine as long as you're not going overboard.
Well, that's really helpful. In the very little time we have left, what do you do if you have kidney stones? What's your recommendation?
If you have an attack, generally because it's so painful, you're going to wind up in an urgent care or an emergency setting. And then you may wind up seeing a urology doctor who then may have you see someone like myself to try to institute measures for prevention in the future.
So the key is obviously once you've had a kidney stone, you really are at greater risk to have it again, and you need to take a look at your diet, exercise, weight, and all of those things, and hydration, crucially, as the thing.
Yep.
Well, thanks so much. This is very, very helpful information and very, very important information. Any last thought? Hydration is the key.
That's the key, hydration.
Well, thanks so much. My guest has been Dr. Stephen Knoll. He's Associate Professor of Medicine, Residency Program Director, and he's the Vice Chair for Education at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.